Welcome, everyone. It's the Texas Values Radio Show on this overcast spring day. I hope you're getting some caffeine for your body, just like you're about to do here for your mind, because that's kind of what we are. We're hot coffee for your mind, waking you up, getting you engaged, getting you going on the issues that matter. We're happy that you have joined us today. I'm Jonathan Covey. I'm the director for policy for Texas Values, filling in for Jonathan Sines on the Texas Values Report this week. And what a great show we have lined up for you today with a very special guest. But before we get to him, just as a reminder, you can catch us every week on this station, KTXW 1120 The Bridge, or you can watch us on demand on iHeartRadio, on Facebook, on Spotify, all of your favorite live streaming platforms. Also, if you want to find out more about anything that we've talked about, you can find tons of great information on our website at txvalues.org. And you can also stay up on breaking news and information through our text alerts by texting TXValues to 797979. Our guest today is West Texas A&M President Walter Windler. Dr. Windler came to West Texas A&M after being the chancellor at South Illinois University in Carbondale. He graduated from Texas A&M, attended University of California at Berkeley, and has his PhD from the University of Texas. So he's run the gamut. He's here to talk with us about concerns with the culture of higher education, as well as timeless truths and values. One might even call them Texas values, and the good work being done over at the Hill Institute, an academy that was established at West Texas A&M to impress upon students the importance of personal responsibility, faith, self-reliance, and so much more. Sir, welcome to the Texas Values Radio Program.
Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan. It's great to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to visit.
Well, we're very grateful to have you and your time. I know you're a busy man. Dr. Windler, I do want to kind of dive in on some of this content, but if you would, for our listeners, just sort of give us a little bit more background about yourself and West Texas A&M and how you sort of how you serve the people of Texas Panhandle.
I'm pleased to do it. I am I'm a native of New York originally, and I started college in New York at a community college, and then transferred to Texas A&M University. And I had never been west of New Jersey. As a matter of fact, I thought New Jersey was the Wild West. And I found out when I got off the bus in College Station that I had been wrong about that. I was now in the Wild West in 1970. Graduated A&M in 72. Have lived in Texas off and on since the time I went there as a student in 1970. You mentioned I spent some time in Southern Illinois, but we got back to Texas as fast as we could. I consider myself a born-again Texan. I just love the state. I love the people. And I am especially fond of the Texas Panhandle. There is a pragmatism here, a commitment to basic stuff that makes so much sense to me. And I'm so thankful to be at a university where those, the views and the values of the population that we serve up here in the Panhandle and the South Plains is held in very high regard. We appreciate very much the people we serve. So that's how I ended up here. I've been here now 8 years, worked, Chancellor John Sharp hired me 8 years ago. I'm still with him. Still with the system, and thankful every day for it. It's a great place to be.
Amen. Well, we're big fans of Texas ourselves, having named our organization after the state. I think I want to start with just higher education. Overall concerns about the culture, specifically. It sort of seems like leaders in higher education just have absolutely no clue as to what their moral compass should look like. The push across, the country for DEI, which, by the way, for our listeners, stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. is responsible for so much of this. Texas, of course, is a leader in this in conservative legislation that was sort of the first to strike the blow at this, passing SB 17, which was the strongest anti-DEI bill in the nation to fight institutionalized identity politics. And students are categorized by their race, by their gender, other immutable characteristics, rather than on merit or on character. So there's a lot to unpack here. But you've discussed, Dr. Wendler, you've discussed in the past the impact of so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion on college campuses, and then of course the Texas legislature passed SB 17 last year. You said in the past that you actually closed down a DEI office at WT. What happened? What happened when you did that, and was there blowback for that?
And that's a good question. And I am I'm fond of SB 17. I think it does the job. And here's what the job is for me. And this is very simple. It is my job as a university leader to provide respect and appreciation for every student that walks on the campus. Part of the problem, the challenge with DEI for me has been that it puts people into political interest groups rather than recognizes the unique individual nature of every human being. Mm. I C.S. Lewis famously said, at least to me it was famous, you've never met a mere mortal. I was asked by the Faculty Senate at West Texas A&M University when we were talking about DEI, how I felt about it. And I said, look, this is how I feel. And you've asked me, so I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be honest with you. Right. Here's how I feel. I believe every human being that walks the surface of the earth was created in the image of God. I actually believe that. Mm. And you don't have to believe it, but you can't take that away from me. Nobody can. That's what I believe. And it means that I treat everybody with dignity and respect to the best of my ability. So the political interest group that I want to cater to has one person in one. And that's the one that I want to cater to. And that fits in very nicely here in the Texas Panhandle, because there is this sense of personal responsibility, of a locus of control over your own life. I would say a notion of rugged individualism. The people up here are tough. This is a tough place to make a go of it. You know, you've heard about the wildfires that we've had up here over the last month or so. Still plenty of threats. These things are remarkable, and these people are tough. One of the people that has been instrumental in responding to these, Chief Nim Kidd of the Texas Department of Emergency Management, that's located on the Texas A&M University system, told me, he said, you know, it's interesting, when you talk to the people about the losses up there, the first thing they talk about is their family. That's the number one concern. Then they talk about their neighbors and what's going on with their neighbors. And then they get to their possessions, and people have lost everything. There's a rancher up here with 800 head of cattle. He had one left, one, when it was all over. This is a remarkable toughness in people and a commitment to deep values, Texas values, I would say. I like to think I'm as panhandle values, but I'm actually, in a sense, trying to recognize that these really are deeply seated Texas values. Right. That's the problem with DEI in my mind. And we are following SB 17. Our Board of Regents and Chancellor John Sharp have been very adamant that we're going to do everything we can to respond, and it's everything. We've shut our office. We didn't have a large office anyway, and we represent the people of the Texas Panhandle in just about every way. If you look at our demographics, they're mm-hmm. very consistent with the Panhandle, and so on and on. So it's a.
Well, and I think that's, I want to drill down on something you sort of mentioned. And, this is not a trick question, very straightforward question. But how does the idea that, each of us, and I guess the fact that each of us are made in the image of God with, inherent worth and with inherent value, undercut all of the, identity categorizations that the DEI makes?
Well, my concern is simply this, that then the one group characteristic for whatever group that's being represented becomes that group supersedes all of the other characteristics that are God-made. And there's things I can't understand or explain.
Right.
I mean, people with birth defects, all kinds of challenges that people had, but that does not change this simple idea that we're created in the image of God. I believe that from deep in my heart, and it requires me to treat people with dignity and respect. I'm not shy about talking about the law of reciprocity on our campus. Christians would call it the golden rule, but it's alive in every organized religion
right. In
the world. And it means that you do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, or don't do to someone what you wouldn't want done to you,
that's right.
Depending on the faith system. But it's always there. It's like Newton's law. You know, for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. It's true in the material world as well as the emotional and psychological world. And the fact of the matter is, I believe that deeply in my heart and my soul, and I try to treat people that way. And it sounds a little Pollyanna-ish. And by the way, I'm not 100% with it either. I mean, there's days when I'm embarrassed the way I treat people. I mean, I'll say something and say, that wasn't the right thing to do. But I'm mindful of that. And I go, you used the word earlier, moral compass. And I think that a lot of universities are afraid to hold up a moral compass and say, this is what guides our university.
Right.
And I'm not afraid of it. As a matter of fact, I'm afraid of not having it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's more scary to not have it, right?
Right, right, exactly.
You know, Lieutenant Governor Patrick, just a few days ago, he released the interim charges for the Senate. These are the charges that he wants the Senate committees to study during the interim before next session. And one of the ones was to monitor the implementation of SB 17, and the progress that each higher education institution is making, in aligning with the new law. And so, just want to ask you, what results do you sort of see from a report that might come out of that? You know, is everybody making great progress, or what do you expect to see?
Well, I'll speak to West Texas A&M University,
sure.
And also to the guidance that we're getting from the Texas A&M University system, again, under the leadership of Chancellor Sharp. This is not a faint exercise. It's serious. It's dense. They're asking us to track a lot of things. And I'll tell you, sometimes it's onerous, but we're doing it because we believe in it also. And I want to create on this campus a culture of excellence, a performance culture, you call it what you will, but it has nothing to do with group membership. It has to do with individual performance and attainment. That's what a university should be. I just read something the other day, 80% of the grades given at Yale University last year were A's. Yale's a good university. They have high admission standards. There's good, high expectations of students, but 80% of those students in all those classes are not excellent. Mm-hmm. It's impossible for me to believe that. And I think people should be judged and assessed on their intellectual abilities and the fabric through which they live. I think they should be assessed on these things one person at a time.
Let's talk about patriotism. You know, people on university campuses, as crazy as it may seem to some of us, don't want to talk about patriotism anymore. And you may have seen this. There was a student posted not too long ago that the American flag triggered her. And, you know, how did we get here?
It's a good question. I just wrote a piece recently. I write a column every week. They're published. These are published now in the Amarillo Globe News and a number of other weeklies and some other daily papers around the panhandle and beyond. But I've been writing these columns. I did it when I was in Southern Illinois for 15 years. I've got 700 of them on my website, walterwemmer.com. And I just wrote one on patriotism. And I'm not ashamed to say that I'm patriotic. I appreciate our nation. I appreciate our state. When I look at where our funding comes from, a significant portion of our funding comes from state and federal sources. And when you look at the fact that Pell Grants, for example, are come from federal tax dollars, and they allow students to pay tuition and fees at the university. If university folks are not patriotic, they're missing an important part of the equation that keeps university, public universities, alive. And that's why, Jonathan, I feel so strongly that we need to elevate and heighten the value and importance of engaged citizenship. It's our responsibility as a public university. And I think patriotism, and I mean informed, Ronald Reagan called it informed patriotism. Frederick Douglass talked about patriotism, and sometimes the true patriot pushes back against something that is in conflict with the founding values of the nation. And of course, he was talking about slavery. But the bottom line is that I think informed patriotism is an often undervalued, understudied part of the American civic life. And I think it's important that we recognize the value of patriotism. And I do mean informed patriotism. I'm not talking about put a blindfold on and just pretend that things aren't happening.
Sure.
But we need to be patriotic. I think it's very important, especially at a public university, for me.
Right. Yeah, especially at public university where we're shaping minds as well. You know, we're talking with Dr. Walter Wendler, president of West Texas A&M University. If you find value in the work that we're doing, you can make a donation by going to our website, txvalues.org. And as we're, coming up on the end of our fiscal year as well, we have a number of crucial fights to win, and your donation just helps us continue to make those fights as well. Dr. Wendler, let's talk a little bit about, the Hill Institute. And, you've discussed this idea in the past of sort of a handshake culture, I think, in the panhandle in West Texas, traditional Western values and how they're crucial to the way of life, and sadly they're being lost. The Hill Institute was really sort of founded with the mission of sort of preserving those timeless values. So tell us a little bit about how the Institute works and what's going on there.
Okay, we are an institute not unlike Civitas at the University of Texas. Well, we are not. But similar in sort of mission and purpose, which is to highlight what I'll call founding values and what the lieutenant governor refers to as Texas values. Because when he was up here to announce with us the Hill Institute, he in some ways corrected me. He said, these aren't just panhandle values. These are Texas values.
That's right.
And he's in fact, they're deeply American values, I think, which at times we lose touch with. But the Hill Institute is a group on campus that is working to study and understand the impact of these deeply seated panhandle values or Texas values, things like trust, respect for others, the importance of family life, faith life, civic engagement, rugged individualism, those kinds of values. They affect every profession and vocation for which we educate and train people at West Texas A&M University. I want to know how those deeply seated value systems affect how an engineer does his or her work, or how a teacher does their work, or how a nurse does their work. I want to know, because I firmly believe those values do impact the way we serve others. Mm-hmm. And in the end, every vocation and every, I'll say, trade, I'm an architect by training, by the way, every one of those occupations is affected by the values of the people who practice them. And I want to highlight that discussion and say, look, we need to not run away from those things. We need to run straight at and acknowledge how important they are to effective practice and effective public life, the exercise of private and public virtue in our daily lives.
Well,
those things are important.
And along those lines, we, in particular, Generation Z, Gen Z, particularly seems to have a deep-seated sort of mistrust of the system, of the United States, of public trust in general? Why are we sort of, you know, it seems like it's sort of at an all-time low. Why are we seeing this with Gen Z and the younger folks?
Now, you're going to say, oh, this is just him being a university president. The fact of the matter is, I hear a lot of that, and I read a lot of the press. But I will also tell you that I am shocked by the depth of passion for deeply seated values, the kinds of values they were talking about, even in Gen Z students. There may be some big trends. I don't think they're alive in the Texas Panhandle the way they are in other places. I think part of that has to do with the fact, the nature of the work we do in the Panhandle. The Texas Panhandle helps produce the food, fuel, and fiber that feeds, powers, and clothes the nation. Within 100 miles of where I'm seated here in Canyon, Texas, 6 million head of cattle are produced every year. And that's 30% of American beef production within 100 miles. And here's my point. That requires a kind of value system. It requires a handshake culture in many ways. There's a lot of things that happens on the range or in the feedlot that are not, you can't check boxes on these things. It's people applying skills and insights and expertise to the work at hand. And I think the value system that allows us to be so productive, say in beef or in gas and oil or in cotton, those commodities require certain kinds of values to be produced. Those values are necessary to produce those commodities, number one. But then number two, there's a reverse flow. Producing those commodities also leads to a certain kind of value system that undercuts, you used the word undercuts before, that undercuts a lot of other value systems.
Right.
I mean, I don't care what someone looks like, what they, any personal attributes, if they work hard and do their job, if they're oriented towards performance, that in this environment will gain credence. And I do think even here, the Gen Z folks, many of them come with a home instilled work ethic and sense of personal responsibility that may be remarkable in New York or San Francisco. I'm loath to say Houston or Dallas because they're Texas cities, and just because they're in Texas, it's good for me. But bottom line is, these rural values are the things that the Hill Institute is intending to look at and study and look at their impact, their social, political, economic impact on the sustenance of the Republican form of government that we love.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you know, Doctor, just real quick, because we're running close to the end of our show, we're a faith organization. You know, we support freedom of conscience, worship. And one thing that, you know, I thought was particularly profound in the Hill Institute manual that I was looking at was a discussion on how, as religious faith has declined in our country, it seems like ideological intensity has sort of increased. So, you know, can you comment on that just real quickly? Is it possible that, you know, religious faith is actually the key to tolerance of others' ideas and independent thinking and so forth?
I would argue that it is. I mean, it's the Enlightenment with legs. You look at the founding fathers, and they were driven by Enlightenment principles, imperfect though they were. Those deep principles shaped a nation that it's exceptional. And I know people don't like to talk about exceptionalism. And I think that is guided by deeply impactful faith principles, Western principles to a large extent, but some transcend even the Judeo-Christian tradition and get into other traditions.
That's right.
It's very important. And by the way, one of the things that bothers me, and I know we're short, but one of the things that bothers me at universities, we sometimes ask students, in effect, to check their faith at the campus gate. And I tell people that's wrong. They need to bring their faith onto the campus and see how their faith drives their learning. And by the way, I wouldn't attend a house of worship that asked me to check my intellect.
That's right.
I would not do it.
That's right.
It's like blind, it's, you know, blind faith, blind anything is not a good thing.
So true. So true. So, Well, Doctor, thank you so much. I know you were able to get on and visit with us and took the time out of your schedule. So we really appreciate having you on. We will look forward to hopefully having you back at some point. But thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to visit with our listeners.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much. You know, we appreciate Dr. Wendler's time, and you know, it's just an appropriate, relevant conversation to have to discuss higher education and the infiltration of wokeness that's permeating our culture. So glad we got to visit with him. A couple of other quick news hits before we run out of time. The National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics announced that they were adopting a policy that says that only students who whose biological sex is female can participate in college female sports. As many of you know, Texas Values has been one of the leading organizations on the Save Women's Sports issue. We had a great time in Collin County last Friday with some of our supporters at the Collin County reception, as well as the Chosen Conference at Prestonwood Baptist Church. We want to remind folks of a few events coming up. So don't forget the Texas Homeschool Coalition coming up starting Thursday, April 18th. Going to have some great speakers there, including Tim Tebow from the Tim Tebow Foundation. Also on Wednesday, April 24th, we're going to have this Texas Values San Antonio lunch. That's going to be from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Alamo Cafe in San Antonio, Texas. And then finally, coming up, our 7th annual Texas Faith, Family, and Freedom Forum, our policy forum, September 13th through 14th of this year. It's going to be, again, at Great Hills Baptist Church off of Jollyville Road here in Austin. So look forward to those things. They'll be on our website at txvalues.org. We want to thank our faithful listeners and supporters and say that if you find value in the work that we're doing, help us by making the donation. And as always, if you want more information, go to our website. We have said this so many times on this podcast, but you know, government belongs to those who show up. And here at Texas Values, we are dedicated to being your boots on the ground for conservative social issues. So this is Jonathan Covey inviting you back next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next conservative generation.